Hello, my friends. It's Monday, August 3rd, 2026, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belleville, your patriotic, progressive, red state refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. On this week's Smoke Session, let's talk about the Twin Falls In-N-Out mass shooting that just happened in Idaho. Also, taking a look at Michigan, where tomorrow Abdul El Sayed faces off against Haley Stevens in the Michigan Democratic Senate primary. And as of tonight, it looks like the Senate is likely to confirm Todd Blanche as our Attorney General. But before we get to all that serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
Oh my God, is that a fire?
Yeah.
That's a fire, boy.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that a fire?
No, that's a fire.
Is that a fire?
It's a fire, all right.
Is that a fire over there?
That's a fire!
So I went out yesterday, heading around to go shopping, actually. And we were coming around the crest in Grants Pass, Oregon. We coming southbound on I-5 from our residence up in the mountains, and we see smoke coming over the hills. And sure enough, as we get into town, there is a fire, a fresh, brand new fire right there abutting I-5 on the northbound side. We're on the southbound side heading in, and we can see a couple of helicopters that were scooping up water from a nearby pond and dropping it on the hillside. There's a few expensive homes up there in those hills, so they have to work on that really quickly. And it appears to be, you know, I was driving by the northbound side today. They had all of the investigators out there. The fire was still smoldering a little bit in a couple of places. And it appears to be one of them a cigarette butt. You know, somebody driving by on the freeway and tossing out a cigarette butt, because that's where they had all the tape and stakes for the, you know, investigation of where the fire started. And man, it just irks me. People, please, as dry as it is out in America right now, do not throw your cigarette butts out the window. I live in the mountains. I live in these trees, and even though my house has wheels on it, I don't want to have to hook it up and try to make a break for it because of a wildfire coming down the mountain. So please be more careful, people out there. And boy, just another knock on cigarettes. You know, they make those things to stay lit. You know, they have all sorts of chemicals and treatment they use on those cigarettes to stay lit. That's why, you know, cigarette smokers don't go through lighters like us pot smokers do. We don't have that stuff on our joints and our pre-rolls. We're constantly having to relight the damn things. Maybe we ought to make a law like that for cigarettes, you know? Why do we allow people to have these things that act as fuses to our wild lands out there, creating all these wildfires? Let's come up with some regulation, you know, someday in the future when those things matter and we care about the environment. Let's come up with a regulation to take those chemicals out of cigarettes and force people to have to light their cigarettes more often. If anything, also, you could sell it as a harm prevention measure to get people to stop smoking or move to vaping, which could be a safer alternative for them. But man, don't burn down my home.
I got parts and labor that add up to $247.80.
Total ripoff, man.
First they stick you with the undercoating, rust-proofing, dealer prep.
It's clearly a scam.
Then you prepare that fencer valve with some 3-in-1 oil and some gauze pad.
Oh, and speaking of Grants Pass, got to tell you about a certain auto dealership in Grants Pass, Oregon. And I don't want to tell you the name of this automotive shop in Grants Pass, but they do automotive work. And anyway, this dealership sent me a text message, I don't know, must have been a month ago, and it said, your GMC is subject to a recall. Sure enough, there was a recall for its back camera, you know, its backup camera. It's got this faulty connection, it can short out. And indeed, we've seen it, you know, go offline a couple of times. It's not a huge deal, but, you know, okay, get that done for free. Let's go ahead and take that thing in. So a couple weeks ago, I got online with them and set up where we could have the appointment, and we got it set for today at 7:30 in the morning. Like, okay, cool. I can delay the recording of my podcast. You know, the dozen people that listen to it, I'm sure they'll understand. And we'll take, because you got to take two cars, right? So I got to take my car and follow my lady love when she takes the car in so that I can pick her up, because it's not going to be done immediately, right? So we get in there and to the guy, and we're the first, you know, it opens at 7:30 and we're the first guys in. And like, well, how long is this going to take? Well, it'll take about 4 hours. Oh, okay. No problem. We got errands to run. We got to do some household shopping. We'll just go ahead. Oh, and remember too, that we still have our great granddaughter with us, little 7-month-old baby that we're toting around. All right. So we go do our shopping, get that all done. I check my phone and there's a text message back from the dealership that's saying something about, you know, you pick up your car, something about a part. Okay. And then it also had a link that said we underwent some testing and you want to see the recommendations from the testing. Okay. So I click that link. And it comes up and tells me that we need an oil change. It'll be, I don't know, $90, I guess. You need a transmission fluid flush, and that'll be however many $100 it was. Oh, and you need a differential change, and that'll be however much that costs. And, oh, you need a brake thing, and however much that costs. And I'm like, I came in here for a recall on a camera. What the hell is all of this, right? And if this app that's telling you on the phone what all these things are, you have to go through and decline all these services. Okay, decline, 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 decline. All right, so we get in to go back to the dealership, this automotive dealership in Grants Pass, Oregon. And I get to the guy at the desk, and he tells me that there's a part that's needed for this recall. They don't have that part in stock. It'll take a couple days before they get this part. Well, I'm kind of angry at this point. I'm like, excuse me, how is it that your company sent me a text message four weeks ago saying I had this recall thing, and 2 weeks ago I book it with you, and here today on the appointment, you don't have the part that's needed? And this guy says, literally, well, GMC makes us do this inspection and to determine whether the part is a repair or a replace. And yours wasn't able to be repaired, so it'd have to be replaced. And I said, and you don't have the part on hand for that 50-50 eventuality that you might need that part if it wasn't a replace? Are you telling me I took my day off today and wasted a whole bunch of my time getting this thing, this appointment taken care of for you to not have the part ready? Because what, it saves you some money or some stocking fee in your inventory here? So I was none too happy. I took the keys and left. And that's when I recalled, oh yeah, isn't this automotive place in Grants Pass the same place that I took my Chevy Volt when it was having engine problems? And the guy, same guy, gave me a quote of like $1,600 to fix it. And so I took the day off and brought it into him, and they got it in there. And then he calls me back and says, oh, no, gosh, I didn't realize you were going to need a whole catalytic converter. That'll be a whole $2,300 more. Yeah, it was the same guy. And then that's when my lady lover reminded me, oh, yeah, and remember when you wrecked the GMC when you got in that front-end collision and we took it in and they had to fix everything from the front-end collision? They finally got it fixed and they told us to come get it. And you took the day off so you could take me in to go get that GMC, and we picked it up and we drove about 8 miles and then it overheated off the side of the road because they didn't catch the fact that there was a cracked radiator from this head-on collision. Remember that? I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. So in addition to the cracked radiator and the whole catalytic converter on the Volt, here they are luring me in with a camera replacement recall that they don't keep the parts on hand to do, but for some reason do an inspection on everything else that could possibly be fluid changed in the damn car. So if you have to do some business getting your GMC or other sort of car fixed, I'd advise you to not use an automotive shop in Grants Pass.
You can do what you want to us, but we're not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth the United States of America. Gentlemen!
Now it's time to take a look at the emerging technologies to address the threat of global climate catastrophe in a segment we call Meanwhile in the USA.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Germany built a suitcase-sized hydroelectric generator that powers 12 homes from a small stream with no dam and zero grid connection. You can carry it onto a commercial flight as luggage. You set it down in moving water, and immediately it generates enough electricity to power a dozen homes for 5 years. Germany just solved off-grid power without pouring a single ounce of concrete. Meanwhile, in the USA, we're developing yet another set of dorky-looking eyeglasses for pervs to record women without consent.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm
Toyota built an EV battery that completely charges in 9 minutes, delivers 745 miles of range, and makes every argument for keeping a gasoline car significantly harder to sustain. Meanwhile, in the USA, we have an entire subculture of car guys who are rolling coal, purposefully modifying their diesel engines to emit an illegal amount of noxious pollutants. To own the libs, of course. Pornainen, Finland, population 5,000, is now heated by a silo of crushed soapstone. It's 100 megawatt hours charged when power is cheap and emissions are down by 70%. It's days to weeks of storage with no critical minerals. Meanwhile, in the USA, we have to tell people to set their air conditioners to 78 degrees because it'll overload the power grid.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Mexico unveils $8,500 Olinia EV to challenge market dominated by Chinese-made cars. It is expected to cost $8,500. It made its public debut on June 7th when President Claudia Sheinbaum drove a prototype onto a stage near Mexico City, and manufacturing targeted for early 2027 at a proposed assembly site in Puebla. Charging from a standard household outlet is part of the plan. Meanwhile, in the USA, a 2025 Chevrolet Bolt EV, the last year of the discontinued model, listed for $26,200 when new.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
In Australia, rooftop solar now is actually cheaper than the cost of building out a power line from a centralized power source to a house. So, if Australia had infinite free power at a centralized source tomorrow, nuclear fission or the Tesseract or something, rooftop solar would still be cheaper. Meanwhile, in the USA, we are actively subsidizing fossil fuel companies, fighting yet another Middle East war to protect their product, and relaxing already lax vehicle fuel standards while pulling promotion of electric vehicles that our automakers are turning away from producing.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
You thought about Snake River down by Twin Falls?
I'll call you again from Twin Falls, okay?
We have an arrangement in Twin Falls.
Yeah, we're picking up some big equipment in Twin Falls.
Now listen, you go do whatever the fuck it is you gotta do in Twin Falls or wherever the hell it is you're going.
Can you tell me if I'm on the right road to Twin Falls?
This weekend we had yet another tragic mass shooting in the United States, and this one hits close to home. It happened in Twin Falls, Idaho, which is about 135, 150 miles away from where I grew up. It's kind of in the central south part of Idaho. One of my best friends, my sister from another mister, Carrie, who was the newsreader and co-host on my podcast for so many years, she's from that area. She's from a little town called Kimberly down there in the Twin Falls area, or as she likes to call it, Twinkie Flats. And there's video that has come out and news that have come out about this shooting. A young man, young white man, as usual, with an AR-15 who was at the drive-thru, began spraying shots and killed three people, one of whom was one of the workers there at this In-N-Out that had only been open for a week. It had just opened, and there was some talk about there being in-and-out employees who had been brought in from out of state to help open this place. So I don't know if this employee was one of those who'd come out from out of state, end up getting shot in Idaho. But and the two other victims are apparently from Utah, a couple that was a tourist couple in town. And five other people wounded, at least according to the reports that I've read. And so what makes this shooting stand out from some of the others is that it was responded to. This being Idaho, there was a guy there who was armed. It was also near the drive-thru. And according to the story in the Idaho Statesman, he was a he was like a nurse, nurse aide, something like that. And so he's always with disabled people and having to take them to public places. And when the 2021 Boise Town Square shooting went down, mass shooting in 2021 there in Boise, that's when he decided he needed to be armed to be able to protect the handicapped, the disabled people that he was working with, should there be another mass shooting near him. So he went and got training and practiced regularly at the range, etc. And he was the right guy in the right place at the right time, because as soon as he heard the shots, he left his girlfriend in the car and jumped out, assessed the situation, found the shooter, set up his sight lines, and started returning fire at the guy. And there's video of him with his pistol firing away at this shooter. And there apparently was also an off-duty Idaho State cop in the restaurant at the time who was also returning fire to the guy. So it led the shooter away from the In-N-Out and out into the parking lot where he offed himself. That's at least the story as I understand it. Well, of course, no sooner did the bodies hit the pavement than Idaho's conservative meme makers are all over this. The big meme going around is the silhouette of the guy, the not the shooter, but of the guy responding with his pistol, the silhouette of him against one of them Gadsden don't tread on me flags with the tagline, Idaho shoots back. And then they're all, you know, clamoring up to Trump saying, you need to make a point of this. You need to point out this in your rallies. You need to talk about this as the reason why everybody needs to be armed, why we need to have good guys with guns, because look at all the lives that he saved. He saved lives. They distracted him. He saved lives. And that's probably true. Probably did save some lives for that guy not being able to stand there and continue firing. But Idaho being armed to the teeth and being a state where it has some of the laxest gun regulations in America. Like, you can literally take a gun to church, to school, to shop, wherever you want to go, wherever you want to take a gun, you can pretty much take a gun in the state of Idaho. You can take an AR-15 locked and loaded into the state capitol while they're in session. I don't know if they've changed that lately. I know that was in effect when I was around there in, like, 2020. But it's a very gun-friendly, gun-happy state. So is the argument here everybody needs to be armed like Idaho so that when the mass shooter comes on, they only kill three people and wound five? That we can keep it down to the single digits? Is this the argument we're making now? Everybody needs to be armed. We need to allow people to have AR-15s and large magazines so that we can keep the body count down to the single digits. That's the argument they're going to be making. Be ready to hear a whole lot of that. Good guy with a gun rhetoric. And again, I have to always bring this up whenever there's the gun debate. I'm a gun guy. I'm a gun owner. My dad, rest his soul, a gun owner till the day he died, a hunter until the day he just physically could not do the walking necessary anymore. And my dad was a real hunter, not one of these put a bunch of bait out and sit up in a tree and wait for something to come by and shoot it. No, he's one of them track it up into mountains and haul it out kind of hunters. And I would never support any gun legislation that my mom and dad couldn't pass. But the thing with guns, I always say that the thing with guns is it's a third person problem. Like, guns in the first person I got no problem with me and guns. I ought to be able to have any gun I want. I was in the military. I've trained on this stuff. Hell, I should be able to have an M60 machine gun. And as the second person thing, you and a gun, I think I can, maybe I can trust you. I mean, I barely know you, but I've been around you for a while, and maybe we've talked a bit, and I've seen that you're okay with your family, and you don't abuse women or animals, so I think maybe I can trust you. But third person, that guy, uh-uh. That's where my problem with guns is. Like, I'm good with my gun. I think I'm good with your gun. It's that guy. That guy over there who keeps screaming about we can't have red flag laws. We can't have registrations. And we can't have limits on anything. We can't talk about this. And it's too soon. And it's too soon in the body. But we can't talk about it. We can't make it political. We can't talk about it. It's absolutely right. From my cold, dead hands. That shall not be infringed. It's that guy. It's that guy I worry about with the guns. They're the kind of guys that make you want to have the red flag laws. The guys that are always protesting any of these common sense reforms that we come up with, like, hey, I don't know, maybe you can only buy one gun a month. And they freak out, oh God, no, you can't have that, that's tyranny. Meanwhile, we've got, you know, masked thugs who aren't identifying themselves in black SUVs without license plates on them, grabbing people off the streets and taking them into concentration camps. But yeah, go on about the tyranny. Go on about how we need to repel the tyranny. But it's clear to me that the good guy with the gun thing, I could have been that guy. I'm often out in public with my firearm. That could have been me. And I understand why people would have that instinct of, well, hell, if there's going to be a gunfight, I'd like to be the guy with the gun than without one. I understand that instinct. Absolutely. But can we do more to prevent it from getting to the point where we need the good guy? Can't we do something to get to the point where the crazy guy can't get the weapon? Where the unhinged guy has some mental health help? So much of this is a symptom, right? We want to attack the guns and go after all the guns, and we should. Don't get me wrong. We have way too many guns and way too easy access to it. But it's a symptom of a sick society. It's a symptom of a society that doesn't take care of the least among us. A symptom of a society that allows veterans who've suffered PTSD in warfare to be sleeping on the streets. It's a symptom of young men who are growing up without guidance and this incel manosphere culture to hate everything and hate women. There's a lot of, it's, if we were to address a lot of these societal ills, get people health care, get people housing, get people mental health care, we'd see a lot of these shootings go down. But not all of them, because we still have too many guns. And that's where I wish there was just more holistic discussion of this issue, instead of trying to find, pardon the pun, the silver bullet that will cure everything. It's not just get rid of the guns or restricting the access to the guns, but that's part of it. It's not just red flag laws, but that's part of it. It's also, dare I say, doing some socialism, taking care of the people, meeting their needs, so they don't get to the point where they feel like they've got to reach out like that and harm someone. My thoughts go out to the friends and family of the victims of this shooting and the people of Twinkie Flats, Twin Falls, Idaho, who now have to live with this trauma, this terror. You forget about that too, about the people in a neighborhood who, unexperienced to these kind of things, who now will drive by that in and out and remember that there was gunfire and violence and blood there. It's not the kind of America we want to live in. So I hope that we can come to some kind of common sense understanding of what we need to do about this situation. We need to take the weapons of war off the streets, absolutely. There's no reason that a regular, everyday Joe needs an AR-15. Now, I've often said that guns and guns ought to be like regulated like drugs. They should both be legal, but there ought to be regulation commensurate with their potential for harm to self and society. So like pot and BB guns, had at it, whatever. Maybe let's say BB guns and whippets. Like you can buy them, have fun, knock yourself out. And then you get up to like alcohol, cocaine, and semi-automatic pistols and rifles. Well, maybe there ought to be some more regulation, but everybody still should be able to get at those things. And then you get to your cocaine and your ketamine and these higher level drugs. And well, now we ought to have some third party intervention here, a doctor, a counselor, or somebody that checks you out, make sure you're not abusing these things. And then the highest end, you know, PCP and machine guns. There's going to be a whole lot of licensing and registration and checkups and paperwork and limits to where you can use it and how it can be used and such. I don't know how I can codify that into law or get people behind me onto the regulate guns like drugs argument, but well, that's why I'm Radical Russ.
We can't vote for him because we're registered Democrats.
I didn't vote for him.
We didn't vote for him. We'll probably hate him.
I'd vote for him for sure.
But they might vote for him if the only alternative is a communist.
I'd almost rather do that than vote for him.
Have you agreed to vote for him?
Why did you vote for him?
Well, tomorrow we have a big, big Senate primary happening in the state of Michigan. And this is another one that's gained national focus for its attention on the AIPAC establishment centrist Democratic candidate Haley Stevens, who's got the backing of the national Democratic establishment, versus Dr. Abdul El Sayed, who's a progressive challenger who's offering many Democratic socialist proposals, who has foregone taking any corporate PAC cash and is a strict opponent of AIPAC and the Netanyahu genocide going on in Gaza. And the polls going into this race for tomorrow's vote, at least here on Monday night when I'm recording, are showing El Sayed with a sizable lead amongst the primary field over Haley Stevens. And it's been something to watch because Haley Stevens has come out and ad saying, you know, I'm a real Michigander. I'm a real Michigander. They make fun of the way I talk, but I'm a real Michigander, you know. Real, which, you know, you got to take that in the context of how Republicans like to say that, you know, Barack Obama wasn't really American. Kamala Harris wasn't really American. It's got a sliver, an insouciance, if you will, of racism in there. You know, El Sayed, brown guy. So it's got a little bit of that. And of course, she's got the backing of AIPAC. And the video, I talked about the video in the last podcast where the young Jewish woman was asking her why she's taking AIPAC money when AIPAC is also supporting the Republican guy that either one of these two will face off against. What's his name? Rogers? Mike Rogers. I was going to say Collins, but I think it's Mike Rogers is the name. And so as this has been leading up to the vote tomorrow, and the progressive is riding this wave of enthusiasm for democratic socialist policies. You know, the radical idea that politicians ought to listen to their base and do things that benefit them. Yeah, so democratic establishment is shook because El Sayed looks like he's going to win this thing tomorrow. And they're freaking out because, according to the general polls out there, Stevens beats Rogers in the general election. But El Sayed loses to Rogers rather badly in the general election. So we're getting a lot of the scolds from the Never Trumpers out there that I listen to. Tom Nichols out there at the Atlantic and Sarah Longwell out at the Bulwark, you know, and others. They're making this noise about, oh, Democrats making the wrong choice again. You've got to be sensible. You're not serious about defeating fascism. If you vote for this El Sayed, he'll lose to Rogers. And when he loses to Rogers, that'll keep the Senate in Republican hands. And then there goes the Supreme Court and blah, blah, blah. You know, the typical arguments, right? And I'm not saying those arguments are necessarily wrong. There's kernels of truth in that. What I object to is how every time it comes down to this decision of what the base of the Democratic Party is excited about, versus what the establishment, both the Democratic establishment and those remaining few moderate Republicans, I guess we'll call them, lecturing on us on how we ought to vote. It always comes down to, hey, Democrats, don't be stupid and support someone who gets your heart pumping, who addresses your needs and starts promising you things like, you know, health care and higher wages. Don't get excited about that and vote them in. That would be dumb. You instead need to vote for this one that you don't like so much. The one who actively supported the genocide, something that goes completely against your principles. You need to get behind that person. Not the person you really like. You need to get behind that person because people who aren't you will probably like her better. You need to vote for people that other people would like better. Don't vote for the guy you like. You need to be strategic and think about who other people would like. Which we've heard it since the 2008 election with Barack Obama. It was the same argument we got, but you can't, a black man whose middle name is Hussein, who's just had 2 years as a senator, was just a state senator. Nobody's heard of him. He's got the big funny ears. And did we mention he's a black man in the United States of America? Do you think they're ready for it? No. You need to go with the smart, sensible Hillary Clinton. You need to go with the establishment candidate with all the backing of all the super PACs and all of the Democratic super delegates and all the Democratic strategists like James Carville. This would be the smart thing to do. She would do so much better in the general election. You can't have somebody like Barack Obama going against John McCain. You've got to have Hillary Clinton. And the miracle happened. Barack Obama was so insanely talented, he was able to overcome that entire establishment Democratic vote for somebody that somebody else would like groupthink. And what do you know? He won the biggest election of my lifetime, other than Reagan. He exceeded 50% in the popular vote. The only president in this century to do so. So I'm not sold on this idea that El Sayed would be a disaster as the Democratic nominee. I think there might be a lot of people that don't know who he is or what he stands for. There might be much more to come in the future here that bodes badly for a Republican running in Michigan, like gas getting up to $5, $6, $7 a gallon as we're still stuck in the Iran quagmire, as more stuff from Katie Fang's lawsuit comes out and exposes what's going on in the Epstein files, and that the soon-to-be confirmed attorney general, we'll get to that in a second, is covering up for the president's pedophilia from decades back. I don't think the next 8 weeks or so, however many weeks it is till the general election day, in November, yeah, 8, 9, 10. I don't think over that span, things start getting brighter for Mike Rogers. I don't think things get better for Michigan for Mike Rogers, but I see all sorts of potential upside for El Sayed. You get Stevens in there against Rogers. And I don't know, maybe she wins, but maybe a whole lot of Democrats stay home. Maybe people with principles in Michigan, once again, stay home and don't support the centrist candidate backed by AIPAC who approves of a genocide of the Palestinian people. It's my hope El Sayed wins, and I really still believe that progressive politics truly unleashed in this country, a return to prairie populism, FDR-style New Deal. When people see that, people are already starting to see it happen in New York. They're seeing Mamdani with win after win after win, and things happening for the people. Small businesses getting their red tape cut, being able to open small businesses and not having so many licensing issues in New York State. You know, like a Republican would campaign on small business. As more of these Democratic socialists get elected, and there's one, Francesca Hong, I guess, who's running for governor in Wisconsin, who looks like she might win. As more of these wins pile up, and people start to see, oh, all these establishment Democrats who told us we needed to go incrementally, that big change was too hard, that we needed to work slowly within the system, we're all full of shit. If anything, there's a silver lining from the Trump years. It's shown that if you embrace your base and have 100% of their support, and you go balls to the wall in implementing the agenda they wanted, you can accomplish miracles.
It all goes back to your friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. Mm.
They've been suggesting it for years, but Todd won't have any part of it.
Todd doesn't know anything. I just know there's shadow money somewhere, like a slush fund or something.
This looks completely awful, but I just wanted to assure you, my friends, that I am completely innocent.
I will never, ever let our child be named Todd.
So I don't think I've been saying too much over the past few weeks about Todd Blanche, the acting attorney general slash personal defense attorney for the criminal traitor rapist pedophile in chief. But this is pretty much turning out the way I'd expected it to. So there was some holdup on his nomination on the Judiciary Committee because Senators Cornyn and Tillis, both of whom are leaving Washington because they upset Trump, and so Trump had them primaried. Actually, one of them's retiring. I think Tillis was retiring, but he knew he'd be MAGA'd anyway, is why he was retiring. And then Cornyn, he's the one that he got that Trump went and endorsed Paxton, because, you know, birds of a feather fraud together. Went and endorsed Paxton, so Cornyn's out of a job. And the two of these guys have been holding up the nomination because they were upset about two things. Two things bothered them about Todd Blanche. No, not the fact that he's been violating the law since December every day by not fully releasing the Epstein files. No, that wasn't what tripped him up. No, and it wasn't the fact that Blanche has been recommended for disciplinary action to the Bar Association, because it's some of the malfeasance he's been engaged in submitting some of the cases. No, and they weren't upset so much about Blanche being in charge of the Department of Justice while Jeanine Pirro is trying to railroad an Olympian for vandalizing the reflecting pool to comport with the fantasies of the demented dictator. No, that wasn't what they were upset about. And none of that. They weren't upset about any of all those things that are immediate disqualifiers for Todd Blanche being the attorney general. The two things that had them upset was the so-called anti-weaponization fund, this $1.776 billion, get it? 1776. $1.776 billion slush fund that he wants to use to fund his Patriot Army, his January 6th insurrectionist traitor criminals, and his so-called settlement, which is not a settlement, where he sued himself and like a guy with the two sock puppets, one on each hand, saying, I'm suing you. No, I'm suing you. Suing himself. And this alleged settlement is that the IRS can never, ever audit Trump or the Trump sons or the Trump organization now, in the past, or forever in perpetuity. Donald Trump gets to get away with not paying taxes and cheating on his taxes. Those are the two things that were holding them up. So Blanche went back in this little kabuki theater. Oh, I'll bring you some documents. And then he didn't bring the documents, and so they canceled the meeting. And, oh, it's on hold. Oh, will he make it out of committee? Folks, this was never in doubt. Of course he's going to make it out of committee. He's going to say, okay, well, I'll put in writing that the January 6thers cannot be paid out of this fund. Which pointedly leaves out, could they be paid out of some other fund in the future? And then also, Blanche has agreed that Donald Trump, his sons, and the Trump organization just can't be audited for the past tax malfeasance. In the future, maybe they could be audited. And Cornyn and Tillis went, oh, okay, we trust you. Okay, that sounds good. And tomorrow, by the time you're listening to this, they'll probably have already voted him out of committee and on the way to the Senate, where he will get every Republican vote plus John Fetterman. I mean, I'm being redundant, right? Just sickening. This guy's going to be our top cop. Now, he was literally the defense attorney defending Donald Trump for sending armed January 6th rioters to the Capitol, to your workplace, Cornyn, to your workplace, Tillis, literally sent goons to the Capitol to break in and try to kill you. And you're willing to let that attorney now become the top law enforcement official in the land because he promised he won't pay the people who, again, tried to kill you. He won't pay them out of this fund. Man. I always want to, you know, kind of rag on Democrats for being spineless. And then I'm reminded of the absolute invertebrate nature, the jellyfish slime amoeba nature of the current Republican Party. Tillis and Cornyn have nothing to lose. They're not running for re-election. They're out of politics. Trump got them fired, if anything, just out of spite. They might hold this up if they had any semblance of testicular fortitude. But no, we'll just go ahead and do it. And you know why, folks? I'll tell you why. Because they're scared of the violence. They already had Trump send goons after them to kill them once. What's to stop Trump from putting out a Truth Social tweet? John Cornyn and Tom Tillis, terrible people. Who will rid me of these meddlesome senators? I got $5,000 for the first patriot. Now, Trump would never be that obvious about it. But he can put all sorts of things out there. These Republicans are afraid of the violence. They are literally afraid of their base, not electorally afraid, although that's part of it too. They get primaried like Thomas Massie, like the Indiana senators, state senators did, and so forth. Trump will take you out. But they're also literally afraid, physically, for their lives, for their wives and their husbands, their kids' lives. Because this is MAGA is a terrorist fascist movement. And the stochastic terrorism is keeping the Republican Party in line. It's why the checks and balances failed. It's why the Congress did not assert its power over the executive. Because of the literal threat of violence. And meanwhile, you have Democrats not standing up and naming the enemy and understanding the war that we're in because they're not afraid of their base at all. Well, maybe that's what this democratic socialism uprising is. Maybe it's finally a realization of, you know what? We're just not going to vote for you. And we'll get, at least with the Republicans, we know they're assholes that are going to destroy us and kill us. And I know Tom and Sarah and the folks like that on the right will say that's such a juvenile viewpoint and it's so immature. And yeah, okay, it is. But what other mechanism do the people have to get the Democratic Party to address and adopt basic principles like, let's get everyone health care. Let's get everyone better jobs. Let's not genocide an entire people. Let's not support dictatorial regimes. Some basic things. How are we supposed to move the Overton window to the left like Trump has moved it to the right? Because nobody ever talked about Trump and them being moderating to get votes from the left. Trump had a very dedicated, energized base, completely sold himself to them, and gave them what they want. The end of Roe versus Wade, the expulsion of the brown people, the putting the black people in their place, the getting rid of the women and the black people in positions of leadership, the elimination of the science that makes us feel icky or put on masks, the rewriting of the history that makes us ashamed and embarrassed. It didn't seem to have to go incrementally on that at all. So it just went right ahead and did it. And so there is an entire set of Democratic voters under the age of 50 whose entire lives have been from Bush v. Gore. Oh, I guess we can't fight for votes in Florida. I guess the Supreme Court said he's president. Well, that's the rules. To being unable to defeat
Bush in 2004, after Abu Ghraib, after the Iraq War, after everything's going to shit, couldn't defeat that imbecile. To 2008, actively trying to subvert Barack Obama's progressive rise, trying to force Hillary Clinton on us again. 2016, finally, oh, well, it's her turn. Got to give her her turn. Subverting Bernie the entire time, where the energy actually was. Same thing in 2020, subvert Bernie, go back to the center. Gotta pick old Joe, even though he doesn't excite you, other people would like him better. And sure enough, other people did like Joe, he won. But I think people would have voted for anything with a D behind their name after a million people lose their lives in COVID, the mismanagement from a guy who stares directly at an eclipse and lusts after his daughter. Think anybody might have won election after he had 1,600 goons storm the Capitol, chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." And I think we'd feel a whole lot better about this if, throughout this entire second Trump term, we had a Democratic Party that was leading by not confirming his judges, by not voting for his nominees. Remember, Marco Rubio was confirmed unanimously. Every Democrat voted for him. And most of those goons on Trump's cabinet have Democratic votes that supported them. So you can't blame us down here for being disappointed with the poll-tested focus group Democratic Party that's still listening to the Obama bros and James Carville as to how we ought to win races. The guys who jumped right behind Graham Plattner. Ooh, he sounds just like a progressive. He'll definitely get us in the door. Ignoring women, ignoring progressives who had been saying from the beginning, hey, Nazi tattoo, really? And that was after, of course, that was after being force-fed Janet Mills from the Democratic establishment. The Democratic Party is in serious need of reorganization. I'm glad to see candidates like El Sayed. I'm glad to see the progressives that are rising in this party. And to hell with Tom Tillis and John Cornyn for voting to confirm, as I believe they will by the time you're listening to this, that corrupt, rotten Attorney General, acting Attorney General Todd Blanche, covering up the greatest sex crime in American political history. And that's the end of this joint, my friends. The Radical Russ Show is planted, grown, harvested, trimmed, packaged, and rolled up by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Is that absolutely necessary?
Lord, not this again, Willoughby.
Why do we do this again?
Okay, so I had this this post come up through my feed about Jonah Hill. You know, the actor, Jonah Hill. And it says, Jonah Hill says jiu-jitsu has him ready to annihilate anyone who still sees him as the fat guy from Superbad. Quote, I love Brazilian jiu-jitsu, except my body is begging me not to love it. My wife is often like, you're not going to become a professional fighter. You know that, right? You're a comedian. If we got into it, I would fuck you up. I would fuck all three of you up. My favorite thing is people that are like, oh, Jonah Hill, fucking fat guy from Superbad. And I'm like, I would fucking annihilate you, dude. I'm not kidding you. Try it. If you see me, try it, dude. Bring it. Who's got it? End quote. And this guy on Blue Sky, Dan of the Year, says he will never understand that being the fat guy from Superbad is infinitely better than being the martial arts chud nobody likes. Yeah. These guys, this era of the UFC and this idea of guys needing to be so bad, tough to take everybody on. See, I remember a martial arts instructor of mine. He trained under Dan Inosanto, who was a student of Bruce Lee's. And his name was Chris something. Can't remember the name. But anyway, he taught me that the first thing you should do when threatened is run. Get the hell out of there. He also explained that the lifetime chance that you'll be injured by an attacker is somewhere between 0.1 and 0.5%, depending on environmental factors and such. But the chance that you're going to be injured in your lifetime training in martial arts is 100%. So if your real fear is to not get hurt, your best bet is to take your chances and run away. Because if you work out in martial arts, you are going to get hurt. And, you know, maybe Jonah Hill growing up in Santa Monica, being a fat guy, you know. Look, I can understand that, right? I grew up as a fat kid. It can give you some issues. But, dude, you got to work them out in a healthier way, okay? You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalrus.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalrus.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next week, take care of each other. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.